programs that are performing at particularly high levels and getting the kinds of results we would hope, and we fund them further to advance farther. And so we use kind of a blended approach. We also, in our measures, try to understand that there are some external factors that influence our ability to achieve the kind of results we're hopeful of that are beyond our control. But we document what that trend line is doing, and we have a conversation about that and what sort of new approach or innovation are we going to take in order to turn the curve back up and to achieve better results and to continuously improve. We don't want to get comfortable that we're achieving, you know, an 85% success level, even though that might be the standard that we've set. We want to see 86, 87, 90, you know, continually to raise the bar to achieve even greater results.
Talk to me about incentives or rewards, either of employees or departments or programs. I mean, what, you know.
So we have a variety of things we do. We have what we call our STARS Awards program, where every year we solicit applications from our departments, and we really showcase those programs that are achieving superior results. And then we give them nominal rewards for that, that they can then take and plow back into their program. So we haven't gone to the point where we're doing gain sharing for individual employees, but we're really taking more of a work unit or division or departmental team approach, if you will, to incentivizing high performance. And we really shine the bright light on those programs and encourage those departments to get out and kind of tell their story so that those, you know, it may not transfer directly to another department, but there may be some experience that can be shared that will, as a result, ratchet up performance in another area of the organization or across the state. I think we have one of the higher performing child support services. We've actually taken on providing that service to a number of our neighboring counties because we do it so well. And I know that my director is out there really leading a number of the efforts at a statewide level to try to raise up all of our child support agencies.
Great. Further questions? Senator Hancock?
I would appreciate any information both of you can give us. I think that it was mentioned in the child support. Ms. Notley?
Yes,
Notley. Okay. how one nuances accountability to factor in the difficulty, level of difficulty of different populations. You know, one of the things we've had the most difficulty with in school assessment is that students that may come to school hungry and students that may come to school with every advantage are essentially, schools are held accountable and teachers are held accountable with the same metrics. And whether one should, you know, how you do the absolute measurement of a certain percentage point improvement every year versus trend lines moving up. All of that, I think we're going to need more careful consideration of that as we move forward with these ideas.
Mm-hmm. I'll be happy to get you more documentation on that.
All right, I'd like to thank both of you. First of all, congratulations on the excellent programs and,
thank you very much.
And results that you provide and the services to the folks that are better off for that. So
great.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay. We now have public comment. Anyone who wishes to address the committee, now's the time. Come on down. Tell us who you are.
Good morning. Rusty Selix, California Council of Community Mental Health Agencies, and also co-author of Proposition 63, Mental Health Services Act, with the Pro Tem. And I wanted to speak from our experiences there on the right kind of incentives and the right kind of flexibility. And we are advocates for firewalls because we know that in spite of whatever you may say, the fundamental pressure is to balance the budget in a single year. As a result, the things that we know will produce the best results, usually prevention and early intervention type things, are usually viewed as the discretionary costs. and the mandatory cost being the jails and the hospitals, which are the least cost-effective, get the dollars. And that if you create flexibility without protection for types of programs and activities you want, you get the wrong results. But there's another type of flexibility you do need. When we wrote Prop 63 and we did the legislation that Mr. Steinberg carried when he was in the Assembly before that, we called it whatever it takes. We wanted to make sure that you could fund things that wouldn't be normally considered medical. For example, if somebody was going to wind up homeless because they didn't have the money to pay for a U-Haul to move their belongings, we had to pay for that out of the program cost of a mental health service provider, because otherwise the person was going to wind up homeless, hospitalized. Normally, in a silo-based program, you couldn't pay for that, but the results speak for itself. When you want performance, and the way you pay for it is you have to get the other things out of the way. You have to get the audits for did you spend every dollar for the exact same things we said you could do, and account for example, the State Department of Mental Health in implementing Iraq put in a horrendous requirement that you had to assign each cost to an individual, which meant if you built a pot of coffee, you had to keep track of who drank it. That kind of absurdity and the cost, one of our providers tracked how much it cost them to document it and how much it cost the county to review it and how much it cost the state to review that. You have to get out of the way. So the right kind of flexibility works. The wrong kind of flexibility saying you can move money from mental health to another service will always do the wrong thing. In writing Prop 63, we earmarked 20% of the money as a minimum for prevention and early intervention. We knew that if we didn't do that, not a penny would be spent on it. Prevention and early intervention is what we know is the key. We know that every child with a mental health problem shows up in school, usually somewhere between the average of 3 and 8, with problems, and every teacher knows who the kids are with problems. There's no system in place for that knowledge to pass from the teacher to county mental health to get them help at that time. The average age at which they reach the mental health system is between 11 and 14, an average of 6 years after the onset of their mental health problems, and they get it through 3 fail-first doors, through special ed, through child welfare, or juvenile justice. That's when we find out that the child has a mental health problem, not 6 years earlier when their kindergarten teacher knew, hey, there's something wrong here, but there's no system in place. So you have to put the right systems in place and the right incentives, and you have to create the right controls of the funding at the state level. To simply distribute the money by formula to the counties and saying, you know, we're going to ask for performance measures, we're going to ask for it, is not likely to lead to the right results, especially with annual budgets. Unless you had 10-year budgets with a single entity knowing that they're going to be responsible for all the adverse outcomes that came, that if you made every health plan responsible for everybody who failed for the next 10 years from when they enrolled in their health plan, I think you would get some different behaviors out of publicly and privately funded health plans, but that's not the way we do things. So I want to say that the concept of being performance-based instead of the typical audit and silo-driven thing is absolutely right, but suggesting that you get there by being flexible with funds and not creating protections is the wrong way to get there. You're most likely going to do more harm than good by that type of flexibility.
Thank you. Thank you.
What we need, Mr. Seelix, is for you to tell us what we need to do.
Yes.
Positively, to structure a system that will result
We have some very specific recommendations for the realignment legislation. I keep being told they're premature, that you're not ready to hear them yet, because you're only focused on the constitutional amendment. On the constitutional amendment, we want to change a few words. You have one sentence that talks about maximum flexibility consistent with federal law. We have some serious problems with that sentence. I've provided to the administration and to some of the key budget staff about 6 words to add to that that creates the opportunities for you to be more focused, which is to retain some of the protections for children's services and mental health programs that are in Prop 63.
What are the 6 words?
The exact six words? Oh, okay, let me pull those out. This is at the top of page 4 of the constitutional amendment where it talks about the maximum flexibility. So there's 2 parts to it. The first part of it talks about where it says maximum flexibility, to say within each program, so that you have the ability to have the firewalls between them to protect the services. In other words, right now it says...
So any program? Any of the realigned programs?
In other words, flexibility is how you spend the dollars within the realigned programs, within the individual programs, as opposed to overall flexibility, which suggests that you can't necessarily target the money to specific programs. So that within the programs, you want to have flexible administration, because you want to be able to spend the money on the things that work and not be tied to specific things you can spend it on, but you need to be able to protect the dollars for certain services which you know are going to lose out in a flexible county budget process. Mental health has always lost at the state and local and federal level when it has to compete with any other subject. If there's not a firm firewall around it, the money will be spent on the things that cause mental health costs and jail costs and everything to go up, because that's the politically expedient thing. The second thing is to reference, and I've got the exact language, and I will forward it to you all as well, which is that it references not only consistent with federal laws, but consistent with existing state entitlements and protections for mental health and children's services, which exist in Prop 63, and some of the underlying entitlements that existed prior to Prop 63. Those are the six or seven words and provided, and I'll get them again directly to you and your staff.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I think the real work, though, is in the realignment statute. And I have a set of very detailed recommendations on the mental health parts of it, and I will provide them to your committee as well.
Yeah, I think the sooner we see people's ideas, the more we mull them over instead of reacting at the end.
We'll get that to you within the next few days.
Thanks. Okay. Welcome.
Okay, Randy Hexter, California's Disability Rights. We're consumers. And as consumers of disability services, we have just a few things we'd like to say. Mm-hmm. On page 2 of this wonderful handout, it says that he wants to provide dedicated revenues to fund programs during realignment. We want to make sure that's continually sustained programs, that the county continually gets to continue to keep the money. On page 3, it says that the legislative analyst costs for improved focus on outcomes and reporting. We're concerned about this, just like Rusty's just talked about. Prop 63 is a big issue because of the fact that he wanted to take money to dedicate to 3 programs. He wants to defund and then refund the Prop 63 money. But there are programs down the pipeline that are coming up from each county that would be taken away. And that's one of the things we're concerned about there. He was talking about the performance measures outcomes. He was talking about how we took a look at the CPR. CPR is actually about eliminating programs, consolidating programs. So it really wasn't about improving outcomes at all.
He wasn't very enthusiastic about that program, as I recall.
Yes, exactly right. Miss Peak, she had programs from California Performance Review. The first page, it said adopting policy and establishing the program for state government. We had the process for input for public online and in person. There are some ADA components that need to be looked at that. Anytime you take a look at something like that, you want the public input, you want to have make sure that the American Disabilities Act is in process there. The third page, she says she wants regulatory relief. What replaces that regulatory statute? If you're going to take it out, what takes care of it? What fixes it? As we go on, she says that she wants to align alignment of all programs to achieve the mission. If you're going to do this with more, how is this going to work with more with less? If you're cutting the budget and you want to realign programs, how are you going to do with less money? How are the counties going to say, okay, you're going to send this all down to us, how are we going to get more with less? And the last page, this one also is on here too, it's under public policy implications. Will the governor wait for this to happen? Or will he just go ahead? It sounds like he needs to go ahead. It sounds like he needs to get this on the ballot by the 13th. And if he needs to get go ahead, then will he wait for the legislator to do anything? And I guess on the page where it says, he talks about how could the counties, he talks about the public and private sector experience and how counties would do this. How would counties implement this if you have a shift in employment? Right now, I know that Sacramento County, where I live, and I'm also on the commission, but not representing the commission, we have talked about cuts, realignment of departments, and people being bumped up, bumped out. How are we going to be able to do all these great programs that she wants to do if we can't do that? The other thing is, how can we get reform without revenue? You want reform, but you don't have revenue. She says in here that she wants to do, she talks about the three buckets. She calls for reform, not just a conventional tax or cut. The problem of it is, we have to, in order to have some kind of reform, they're either going to A, eliminate the program, undercut, or they're not going to have enough revenue to do this. And I guess, finally, I would like to talk about the Senate governance, and you, this Mr. McKeek here. We agree with everything he says. Giving full funding to services like IHSS keeps people in their homes and out of nursing homes and saves the state money. The problem of it is, Sacramento is not funded that way. All we're talking about in Sacramento County is how we're going to eliminate the program, how we're going to save and not save programs, but also how we're going to realign programs. You guys are talking about realignment here in the state. They're always talking about realignment in the county. And realignment seems to be elimination, not savings. And then finally, sentence is, somebody said, last sentence is, clients need help, wherever that help comes from. If you're a client and you need a service, just like Rusty said, if you need a service, you need to be able to get that service. They were talking about Senator Cox, the late Senator Cox talked about consolidation of programs in county governments and how to make county governments work better. We agreed with some issues on that, but one of the things we opposed to it, as we opposed to some of these issues, is if they eliminate the program, who tells the client? Who tells the consumer where that program is? Thank you. I thank you all for listening to me.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and we are adjourned. Thank you all.